Hey, good afternoon. And you can read the history up there. But I'm not going to go into myself. What I'm really here to talk to you about is a paradigm shift in the way that we are viewing gun control within this country. First of all, we have the historical perspectives, cultural myths. Some of those are actually perpetuated by the media, both the news and in cinematography. So there are some films where we always had this one presence of guns and violence, cowboy films, gangster movies. We always seem to resolve our conflicts with guns. It's been part of our culture because in the beginning, with the Revolutionary War, we actually separated from another nation and we actually based our culture on guns. If we look down and look at the Constitution and Declaration of Independence, the Declaration of Independence, I'll make a mention about that in a moment, was actually the first document the Constitution took years to develop. It wasn't something that people just sat down, wrote overnight, and signed. The next thing, we have also a conflation or an amalgamation of different disciplines trying to address the issue, sometimes conflicting in their viewpoints, their cultural perspectives about guns, and how we should be addressing them. How should we address the offender, as we put it, or how should we address the victim? We also have the prevention, mitigation. We also have response efforts, regulations, legislatively. All these things are admixed, and how are they actually working together? CIKR sectors, critical infrastructure and key resource sectors. Every society has at least have 19 of these in order to be self-sufficient. Energy, transportation, education, access to food, access to medical care. Those are the things that are listed there. We also have a prison industrial complex that is somewhat dependent upon its existence through the activities and the consequences of gun misuse in this country. We also have the battleground of the How Wide Bridge. You come into my community, I don't know who the heck you are. You have a piece of metal on your badge. And so who are you? How do you cross over that bridge to talk to people? Prior legislative ban on research, the actual legislation was passed sometime about 5-10 years ago, that time frame where they stopped people at the CDC from doing research on guns. It was actually a legislative ban. You cannot spend any money or federal funds on what they considered to be an attempt at gun control. Here, Albert Einstein. If many of you don't know him, you should read about him. You're a scientist. But Albert Einstein was one of the greatest social activists in our time. He was a very good friend of Paul Robeson. And this is his impression about guns after World War II. We may have vanquished an external enemy, but have been incapable of getting rid of the mentality created by the war. It is impossible to achieve peace as long as every single action is taken with a possible future conflict in view. So those who cling on to their guns and feel that these guns are going to resolve my issue are actually perpetuating a society that is not based on tranquility and peace, is actually going against it. The next thing, the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain and unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. This was the document that Abraham Lincoln used to look at the Constitution. So when they use the Second and the Fourth Amendment, Second Amendment, right to bear arms, Fourth Amendment, right to be protected against illegal search and seizure, the Declaration of Independence says you need to have liberty and the pursuit of happiness and life. So even if you have a constitutional document, when they founded the country, they said these things were inalienable. So if you're using the Constitution to create a situation that is against those, it seems like it's contradictory. So you don't have to look at all this whole thing. In the middle, there's a red line that says modified, and that is spelled C-Y-N-E-F-I-N, but it's pronounced Canavan, the Canavan model. They look at systems and chaotic environments, complex environments, complicated, and then the obvious. And what this is about is trying to pull people from this complex environment, chaotic environment, back into a complicated one, because you can see practices under that. And the practices are novel, emergent, good, or best practices. That's consistent with the CDC guidelines, HHS. We should be striving for best practices. And those categories below, it tells you how you evaluate cause and effect. Do you act first? Do you probe first? Do you sense so you can come to a conclusion? Do you bring information in? Now, here is an exercise for you. I want everyone in the room, and there are a couple of people who went through this exercise with me before, so refrain. But what I want you to do is I want you to spell out loud a series of words I tell you. And then I want you to answer this question immediately, okay? First word I want you to spell is crop. The next word is drop. The next word is mop. The next word is cop. The next word is drop. The next word is mop. The next word is crop. When you get to a green light, what do? And a green light? That is called parallel processing. It's a natural, instinctive thing. If you don't do it, there's something wrong. Your body gets honed into finding an answer to a question, and it's trying to pattern itself out of your behavioral pattern. So, if that's happening, look at this. How many people think homicides is a big problem with guns in Chicago right now? Out of control. Let's look at the numbers. Back in 1928, you had 498 homicides in Chicago. Back in 1990, you had 851. 1995, 828. 2000, 633. Now we're at a little bit above 400. Back in 2014, it was 432. So the question is, why is it so important now that gun violence is brought up in the media? Is it for geopolitical considerations? Is it for putting another focus on things? And is this going to guide how we spend our money in public health? What is the motivation for skewing the public's opinion? Okay, it has implications for gentrification, all kinds of things. You can go into that with a ton of bricks. So just a little bit of information. That's from the Chicago Police Annual Reports. Now, control implies an external force, the presence of application of a force that tries to control, or it's trying to control the subject of the control. So you're trying to guide it. You're trying to make it move in a certain direction. Gun misuse implies either the inappropriate, okay, intentional or unintentional use or handling of a gun. Now, most people think that because of the media, that homicide is number one, right, for guns? Guess what? Suicide, 61% of gun deaths in this country every year are due to suicide, not homicide. 14 to 15% are due to accidental shootings. 21% are due to homicides. Guess what? So one-fifth of these deaths, and we're all of a sudden looking at this big picture about gun control and trying to control guns when there's a big social ill going on with suicide? Why is our focus over here instead of on mental health? So maybe we are looking at things a little bit differently than we should. So gun misuse prevention, as used here, involves proactive approaches and steps taken to prevent the unintentional as well as the intentional misuse of a gun that results in injury or death. We need to reframe and have a paradigm shift on the talk about guns. It is no longer gun control response. It should be gun misuse prevention. We have the emphasis on the wrong things. So, here we go. Guns are classified by the manufacturer, ultra-structural characteristics, how they look, how they're shaped, who makes it, the names of them. We now have 3D printed guns in plastic. These can evade detection. Okay, the term gun control causes polarization. So why do we use it? Let's get away from it. Do you know that the NRA actually started as a gun safety and security advocacy group? It wasn't about controlling guns and keeping, making sure we fight to make sure people have the rights to own guns. It was about safety and security protection. The goal is to create a collaborative public and private approaches to identify, address, prevent, and respond to the alignment of those factors leading to gun misuse within this nation. That's where we should be going. This is a risk threat analysis. I actually just finishing a master's in Homeland Defense and Security, Naval Postgraduate School. I was in the military for 26 years and retired from the reserve. And I started looking at this thing and said, well, you know, risk equals threat times vulnerability and the consequences. So there's certain things that are determinative. And this is Bach Sandpile. That's a great book to look at and read. He talks about self-organized criticality, how organizationally structures become more and more complicated until they fail because they can't keep up with themselves. So the risk, how do we minimize the risk? Either we can stop the vulnerability by training people and teaching them how to avoid the risk, or we can try to modify the threat itself. So here's a threat. These are some of the threats that we're facing. Criminal terrorist activity, straw gray black markets. This is when you buy the gun for someone else in a straw market and sell to them. They may not be legally entitled to it. The gray market is when it's a parallel market where they don't collect taxes. They just sell guns throughout the, beside the traditional system of selling guns. And the black market is completely illegal. They're just making guns or selling them illegally. Poor policy legislation and prison industrial complexes. These are all threats. Vulnerabilities, poor structuring in the community, the CIKR sectors I talked about, unpredictability of the event itself, remaining reactionary, lack of research funding, and the lack of public-private partnerships. Now, if we look at public-private partnerships, the potential solutions are prevention-centric policy approaches. We need to be involved in that process, the legislation, the interdisciplinary collaboration as well, to make sure we cross disciplinary lines, mental health with homeland security, with public health interventions in a hospital level. Technological approaches. The occupational environmental medicine, they have models about how to create solutions. If you look at the seatbelt, does anyone know how the seatbelt started in this country, the use of seatbelts? It was doctors. Doctors back in 1918 actually put seatbelts in their car and strapped themselves in. The people who were there, the doctors, were saying that this is something that needs to be done. They started pushing advocacy groups. You started getting industry. Industry, first of all, pushed back and it said, you cannot do this because it's going to increase the cost of the car and that kind of thing. Over time, they changed the public opinion about safety in the car. So trying to take guns out of the community, over 500 million guns we know of, is going to be totally impossible. Gun buyback programs are a waste of time. You try to get the gun out of someone's cellar back down in Mississippi, okay, and try to come out alive. People have arsenals of guns. So what do we do if we have an entrenched product, just like automobiles? We have to have a technological solution to attach to that item that can't be extricated, that makes it safer to use and decreases the threat and the consequences. So if I'm in a car, I put my seatbelt on. The risk I had before without the seatbelt is that I'm moving along in my car, the car hits a tree, and I go through the windshield because I'm unrestrained. So the threat is being unrestrained in the car and moving forward. Right? The vulnerability is that I'm human and I'm going to go through a piece of glass and metal and I have no resistance against it, and the consequences are death. So how can we modify guns in order to make them safer? Now, since we know people with the public health thing, I have one patent out that we're working on right now as an idea. It's to make these guns have a global a tracking mechanism, a device that actually alerts the person that their gun is moving at home. Because if someone is going to use it for suicide and they have people who are mentally ill at home, and they happen to go and pick the gun up, they'll know it's moving. If their children move the gun, they'll know it's moving. They have complete control, so the government is not involved. We have to give certain sections of the population control of what they think they need to have control over. We also can use the geospatial tracking devices for illegal gun sales. They have no rights whatsoever in the black market to privacy and protection. So if those guns start moving around the world, and we can actually track them. We need to have an RFID device, radio frequency identification device, embedded in the weapon so you can't file the numbers off. There are fingerprint things, technologies now. It's only 70%. They're doing more in Europe than they are here on that. But these are some of the things that we need to start looking at. How can we make this product that's so deadly safer? Even from an industrial perspective, we can either eliminate something, which we can't do with guns right now, or we can make it safer, substitute something else, add a technology. And that's, I think, where we need to go for gun safety and security. But we need to change our minds, too, about how we're looking at it. It's not what the media is telling us it is. Thank you.